Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Last time, I began discussing with you the structure of the action in the play Hamlet. And I just brought out a few points. Shakespeare was very diligent in not only creating a foundational structure for all of his plays. For example, each play has five acts. But he also added to that foundation a structure of action or movement in the play. When you understand the movement or where the action in the play is taking you, then you can focus on understanding the sublime poetry in Shakespeare's plays. And it's much the same way as if you were going out to a movie and for some reason you got stuck and you walked in the middle of the movie and then you don't know what happened before and you don't know how it's connected to what happens at the end of the movie. So knowing the movement of the play or the action in the play before you even start reading it really does help you out. Now, what I want to do today is I want to just finish discussing the movement structure of the play. If you have not yet listened to last week's program, well, you really should get to that as soon as you can because it is going to help you get the big overview of the play. Now, as I said last time again, while the play has five acts, there are basically only three major movements in Hamlet. And, or you could call these major movements, you could call them groupings of action, but there's only three of them, and they are, they're pretty evident once you, let's say, study into the play and you read it. You're going to have to read it several times to really get it. But essentially, this means that the action or the movement or the actions and the movement or the movement of the actions, however you want to put it, it does cross several acts. Now, last time I did complete my discussion of movement one, but by way of reminder, I just wanted to remind you that I did title movement one, "There's a Lot Going On in Denmark." Now, it is interesting here that all of the action for this movement does take place in act one, which does have five scenes. So here's a situation where the movement is in one full act. But again, this act does have five scenes. Some of Shakespeare's plays, their acts maybe only have two scenes. But just again, by way of reminder, the ghost does dominate the action of movement one or act one. And in fact, it is the ghost who takes us or, takes the audience into the action of the play. It's like the ghost sets up everything. And of course, Shakespeare does this in a unique way using the ghost. And it is just really, really kind of fascinating. It's if you ever see a really good production, or if you see the Branagh film, as I recommended, I mean, they do a great job of, creating a lot of suspense and intensity with that. But in movement one, again, by way of reminder, we are introduced to the royal court of Denmark. We do meet Claudius and Gertrude just after the marriage. We meet Hamlet, who is dressed in black, obviously because he's mourning the death of his father. But once we get to know the character of Hamlet, we also know he's mourning Hamlet. He just is upset and sad about himself as well. But we'll talk about this in the next couple of programs. But he's also upset that he got passed over as king. He was the rightful heir. But if you understand anything about Danish law, from back in the 1500s and 1600s, there was a college of election who would pick the next king. In other words, they would have the right to review, well, does this king or does this person really fit in to be king? Now, that they did have to take them out of the king's family, or that the next king had to be taken out of the king's family. Hamlet tends to be an only child, but, well, not tends to, he is an only child, but the election committee or the college of electors did just pass him over and they went right to Claudius. So we can talk about that later. also in Movement 1, we meet Polonius. He is the prime minister for Denmark. We also meet Laertes' son, and then we meet two diplomats who are being sent to settle the recent trouble being stirred up by young Norway. Now, the other thing that's really important is Movement 1 also gives us insights into Polonius' family. Now, Shakespeare does give us a very personal view of an interaction with Laertes and Ophelia, and then there's also a very close interaction between Laertes and Polonius, and then there's another interaction between Polonius and Ophelia. And what Shakespeare is really doing there is he's giving us another layer of where trouble is in Denmark, and here there's trouble in the family. And we can almost look at Polonius's family. This is probably symptomatic of other problems spread throughout Denmark. But essentially, Laertes and Polonius are very leery of Hamlet's true intentions with Ophelia, and they really do question his character, but they also know that he's a prince, and there's, you know, trouble in Denmark, and so he's going to be taken up with, you know, helping to solve some of those problems in Denmark, or so they assume. But also, I think Shakespeare does a great job, and Branagh really brings this out more in his film, that both of these men are actually of questionable character, and that's what leads them to suspect Hamlet's character. And, you know, Hamlet really is, he's supposed to be like a student at Wittenberg, but we know in the play that he knows the actors of the acting company that comes in to entertain them. He knows them very well. So it seems like you know, he spends a lot of time away from school going to plays, maybe even acting in plays. And so we also know that Laertes, when he wants to go back to Paris, he really wants to go back to the Paris nightlife. So in other words, to the pure, all things are pure. But if you're not so pure, then you're not going to see Hamlet as pure. So that's what's really going on there. Now, in Act 1, Scene 5, that's the very last scene of this first movement. It does conclude quite dramatically when the ghost speaks to Hamlet and reveals Claudius's villainous assassination. So that really does end quite dramatically, and it's really quite intense. And even the ghost comes in and makes Marcellus and Horatio swear that they will not tell anyone what he's revealed until Claudius is dead. Also, then last time I began discussing Movement 2, which I described as or titled Hamlet versus Claudius. And just by way of reminder, this movement takes us from Act 2, and that's Act 2, Scene 1, through Act 4, Scene 1. And so there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of things that sweeps through this. It's the greatest part of the action of the play takes part in this movement. So it's really quite big. And again, last time we'll go through some of these things quickly. There was the breakdown, or that does discuss the breakdown in the love affair between Hamlet and Ophelia. Hamlet's plan to prove that Claudius is guilty is involved with the play that he calls the Mousetrap. And so in the first half of this movement, and I'll give you where the line is drawn, Hamlet is the one that drives the action. Hamlet is the one that gets the players to make this play that, you know, is to catch Claudius or to catch his conscience, to force Claudius, you know, kind of like out of the closet, and that he actually murdered his brother. And so Hamlet's got the drive of that action up until that play. And then once Claudius rushes out of the play, then Hamlet knows that what the ghost has told him is true. So that really, that's where Hamlet's action of this second movement ends. And, you know, Hamlet and Horatio know that the king is guilty, and they know that the ghost was telling the truth. Now, I just want to give you a clip from that 1996 Branagh film again. And again, this is Hamlet and Horatio. After the play, they know that the ghost is telling them the truth. And so we'll just go ahead and play that clip for you now.
Boy, let the hardly, sir, and a forest of feathers if the rest of my fortunes turn Turk with me. With two provincial roses on my raised shoes, get me a fellowship in a cry of players.
Half a share.
A whole one, aye, for thou dost know, O Damon dear, this realm dismantled was of Jove himself, and now reigns here a very, very peacock.
You might have rhymed.
Oh, good Arisha. I'll take the ghost's word for £1,000. Didst perceive?
Very well, my lord.
Upon the talk of the poisoning.
I did very well note him.
Come, some music, come, the recorders, for if the king like not the comedy, why then belike he likes it not pretty. Come, some music.
That is a very interesting scene, and Hamlet is... energized, he wants to go ahead and do things, but he kind of like drops out of the action at that point. Now, this is when Claudius takes over the action, and he takes over then for the second half of this movement. And it is really quite kind of interesting. It's like Hamlet almost drops out. We do see him periodically, but we don't really see any action on the part of Hamlet until Act 5, Scene 2, at the very end. Then he takes some action, and of course then it gets really bloody from there on. So, but it is interesting, is I want to show you how Claudius begins to take action, and here's the scene where right after the play, he gets together with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and if you remember, they are the child friends of Hamlet, who he doesn't trust at all. He does call them adders. They're like snakes to him. But here's also a clip from that Branagh film where Claudius then takes Rosencrantz and Guildenstern into his thinking, and he wants to ship them and Hamlet off to England because he knows now that Hamlet knows he's guilty of killing his brother. So, again, here's a scene from, or a clip from the Branagh film.
I like him not, nor stands it safe with us to let his madness range. That will prepare you. Your commission will forthwith dispatch, and he to England shall, along with you. Terms of other state may not endure hazards so dangerous as doth hourly grow out of his lunacies.
We will ourselves provide. Most holy and religious fear it is to keep those many, many bodies safe that live and feed upon your majesty.
The single and peculiar life is bound by all the strength and armor of the mind to keep itself from annoyance, but much more, that spirit upon whose will depends and rests the lives of many. The cease of majesty dies not alone, but like a gulf doth draw what's near it with it. 'Tis a massy wheel fixed on the summit of the highest mount, to whose huge smokes 10,000 lesser things are mortised and adjoined, which when it falls, each small annexment, petty consequence, attends the boisterous ruin. Never alone did the king sigh, but with a general groan.
Arm you, I pray you, to this speedy voyage, for we will fetters put upon this fear, which now goes too free-footed.
We will haste us, my lord.
So you can see what traitors Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are. They pretend to be Hamlet's best friends, but really they are on the side of the king and Claudius, and they are actually going to carry letters to England that Hamlet should be executed on his arrival. Now also in this the rest of this movement, we do have Claudius's prayer of repentance, which we talked about last time. We know that in this part of the play, Hamlet comes very close to killing Claudius, but he stops when he hears him repenting. And there's some real, let's say, maybe 16th century religious implications here. They believed, certainly they believed in the doctrine of purgatory, and of course they believed that people would go to hell if they were murderous or, you know, really sinful people. And Hamlet hears Claudius repenting, and so he decides not to kill him at that point because, well, if he repented, he could go to heaven. And, of course, I think you might remember that the ghost tells Hamlet that he's in purgatory right now because he didn't have a chance to repent before his brother killed him. So we also have in this movement, too, Hamlet is meeting with Gertrude, and we played you a clip from that last time. We have Hamlet's murder of Polonius, then Hamlet is sent to England. Now, that leads us up then to this final movement, or movement three, and I've titled this one Death's Dark Veil. Now, I have been reading some things and studying some things, and of course, some scholars point that Hamlet is responsible for all the deaths in this final act, and I'm not sure I actually agree with that or not. So I just changed this to Death's Dark Veil. Now, this movement runs from Act 4, Scene 4, to Act 5, Scene 2, and that is the very final scene. And basically, this movement is moved along by Claudius's actions to destroy Hamlet. But you do have some other things as in here that does kind of add to the action and actually leads to the intensity. And, of course, this last movement is really pretty intense and it's pretty gut-wrenching. And I know a lot of people tend to shy away from Hamlet because of it, but I do think that if you remember our interview with Papa Essadieu and Natalie Simpson, Papa did say that the reason why this scene is so bloody and so graphic in many ways is because, Shakespeare was really trying to make a point. It's like it's epic, and, it's like watching Mad Max on steroids, I guess, if you know anything about the Mad Max movies. So that's the way he described this last scene or this last movement in Hamlet. So basically, this scene opens up with Ophelia's madness and suicide. And so I want to just give you a short clip on this. This is a scene where Ophelia is talking to the king, and it's really quite a sad scene. But it does show you how Shakespeare does build intensity into this play.
How do you, pretty lady?
Well, God yield you. They say the owl was a baker's daughter. Lord, we know what we are, but know not what we may be. God be at your table.
Conceit upon her father.
Tomorrow is St. Valentine's Day, all in the morning betime, and I am made at your window to be your valentine. Then up he rose and donned his clothes and up the chamber door. Let in the maid, the outer maid, never departed more.
Pretty Ophelia.
Now the very next thing that happens in Movement 3 is Laertes returns from Paris to avenge his father, and he actually wants to kill Claudius, and he wants to declare himself king. And so that's really quite interesting. He knows that Hamlet is off to England. And so here's another clip from that Branagh film, and that just shows you how crazy this final scene gets. And here Laertes is leading a riot into the castle to take over the throne from Claudius.
Save yourself, my lord. The ocean, overpeering off his list, eats not the floods with more impetuous haste than young Laertes and a riotous head o'erbears your officers. The rabble call him lord. And as the world were now but to begin, antiquity forgot, custom not known, the ratifiers and props of every word, they cry, choose we, Laertes shall be king. Caps, hands, and tongues applaud it to the clouds. Laertes shall be king, Laertes king.
How cheerfully on the false veil they cry. Oh, this is counter, you false Danish dog.
The doors are broken.
Where is this king?
Sir, stand you all without.
No, let's come in.
I pray you give me leave.
We will.
I thank you.
Keep the door.
Oh, thou vile king!
Give me my father!
Calmly, good Laertes!
That drop of blood, that calm, proclaims me bastard! Christ cuckold to my father! Brands the harlot even here between the chaste, unsmirched brow of my true mother!
Now, again, we'll talk about all this when we get into the instructors panel's discussion of this play. But also in this scene, you know, Shakespeare's kind of a master of this. All of a sudden, Hamlet has a surprise return from England, and he sends a message to the king, and he says, look, I'm coming to see you. And, of course, you know, Claudius knows that he sent letters to have him killed. And actually what happens is Hamlet kills Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. So that's why we call this Death's Dark Veil, because people start dying right and left. Okay, so that really excites the action. Then once Claudius hears that, then he and Laertes plot Hamlet's death, and they plan to use a poisoned rapier in a duel to do that. Again, here's just a short clip from the Branagh film.
Laertes, was your father dear to you? Or are you like the painting of a sorrow, a face without a heart?
Why ask you this?
Not that I think you did not love your father, but that I know love is begun by time, and that I see in passages of proof time qualifies the spark and fire of it. There lives within the very flame of love a kind of wick or snuff that will abate it, and nothing is it alike goodness still, for goodness, growing to a pleurisy, dies in his own too much. That we would do, we should do, when we would. For this wood changes, and hath abatements and delays as many as there are tongues, our hands, our accidents. And then this should is like a spendthrift sigh that hurts by easing. But to the quicker the ulcer, Hamlet comes back. What would you undertake to show yourself indeed your father's son, more than in words?
To cut his throat in the church.
No place indeed should murder sanctuarize. Revenge should have no bound. But, good Laertes, will you do this? Keep close within your chamber. Hamlet returns, you'll know that you are come home. We'll put on those who shall praise your excellence and set a double varnish on the fame the Frenchman gave you. Bring you, in fine, together. And wager on your heads, he being remiss, most generous, and free from all contriving, will not peruse the foils, so that with ease, or with a little shuffling, you may choose a sword unbated, and in a pass of practice requite him for your father.
I will do it, and for that purpose I'll anoint my sword. I bought an unction of a mountebank so mortal that but dip a knife in it where it draws blood, no cataplasm so rare collected from all simples that have virtue under the moon can save the thing from death that is but scratched withal. I'll touch my point with this contagion that if I gall him slightly, it may be death.
And so you can see where Claudius is really driving the action now, and Hamlet's not even around, let's say, on stage during these scenes. Now, one thing that Shakespeare was really a genius at is he would use comedic scenes to kind of give the audience, a break or to let them catch their breath. And so the other really, I think, very important scene in this movement, to if you really want to understand Shakespeare and what a genius he was at writing, is we have the gravedigger scene, and it is a very comedic scene. And I want to just play you a clip now. Billy Crystal is playing one of the gravediggers, and he has this discussion with Hamlet, and it's really quite a funny scene. So again, I want to play a short clip here of Hamlet going toe-to-toe with the gravedigger, and that's Billy Crystal, and so it's really quite a scene.
Whose grave's this, sirrah?
Mine, sir.
A bit of clay for to be made for such a guest as me.
I think it'd be thine indeed, for thou liest in't.
You lie out on't, sir, and therefore it is not yours. For my part, I do not lie in't, and yet it is mine.
Thou dost lie in't to be in't, and say 'tis thine. 'Tis for the dead, not for the quick, therefore thou liest.
'Tis a quick lie, sir. 'Twill away again from me to you.
What man dost thou dig it for?
For no man, sir.
For what woman, then?
For none neither.
Who is to be buried in't?
One that was a woman, sir, but rest her soul, she's dead.
How absolute the knave is. We must speak by the card, or equivocation will undo us. By the Lord, Horatio, these 3 years I have taken note of it. The age is grown so picked. The toe of the peasant comes so near the heel of the courtier, he galls his kibe. How long hast thou been a grave maker?
Of all the days in the year, sir, I came to it that day that our last king, Hamlet, or came Fortinbras.
How long is that since?
Cannot you tell that? Every fool can tell that. It was the very day that young Hamlet was born. He that was mad and sent into England.
Now, after that comedic scene, again, the audience has gotten their breath. Hamlet and Laertes go after each other right at the burial of Ophelia. And so it's really an intense scene. Claudius is really torqued. And, everyone kind of leaves the scene. And then Hamlet then is encouraged to duel Laertes. Laertes, hands a glove to Hamlet and says, look, let's duel. There's a real touching scene where Horatio encourages Hamlet not to duel Laertes. But there's, again, a really important scene, or maybe some really important poetry here, is where Hamlet decides to put his fate in God's hands. Now, I want to play a clip from the Royal Shakespeare Company production of Hamlet, and this was the production that I saw earlier in the summer, and this is Papa Asadu just complying now with what he says is, let be, just let it in God's hands. And so again, this is a very, very moving clip from the RSC production.
Not a whit. We defy augury. There is a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, 'twill be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all. Since no man of aught he leaves knows, what is't to leave betimes?
Now, just to quickly end this scene, we have the final duel scene, and let me just try and list all this for you. They have the whole setup was there is a poison cup, there's a poison sword, and so if Laertes doesn't nick Hamlet with the poison sword, and then they're going to encourage Hamlet to drink a poison cup. Well, what happens is it doesn't go as anybody planned. Laertes actually kills Hamlet with a poison sword, although he doesn't die immediately. And then Hamlet somehow in the scuffle gets that sword, and then he nicks Laertes, and essentially he kills Laertes with that same sword. Now, in all the action, Gertrude actually drinks the poison cup that was meant for Hamlet. And then Hamlet finally kills Claudius, and then Horatio attempts to finish off the poison cup, but Hamlet begs him not to. And so here's a clip of this end scene when Hamlet is telling Horatio, don't drink the cup. And this is from that Branagh film again.
Never believe it. I am more an antique Roman than a Dane. Is yet some liquor left.
Has not a man give me the cup? Let go! By heaven! I'll hide. Oh, God, Horatio. What a wounded name. Things standing thus unknown shall live behind me. If thou didst ever hold me in thy heart, absent thee from felicity a while, and in this harsh world draw thy breath in pain to tell my story. What warlike noise is this?
Young Fortinbras, with conquest, come from Poland. To the ambassadors of England, gives this warlike volley.
I die, Horatio. The potent poison quite o'ercrows my spirit. I cannot live to hear the news from England. But
that I do prophesy the election. Lights on Fortinbras. He hath my dying voice to tell him. With the occurrence more and less which have solicited, the rest is silent. Thou cracks the noble heart. Sweet prince, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Why is the tram coming?
Now that's the end. So that's it for today. Next time, we're going to have the instructors panel, and they will begin discussing details from the play. I know you're going to enjoy that, and I'm looking forward to talking to all of you then. So please write to me any comments you may have, and you can write to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1, and JBL now has a Facebook page. Please like this page at facebook.com/justthebestliterature, all one line, no spaces. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.